This is disc number 12.
I think I know a better way. Someone who might be able to tell us where Richard is. Jebra. I don't want to waste any more time, and I think Jebra might be able to provide an answer sooner than the Sliff would. Zed pressed his thin lips tight as he considered. It's worth a try, he said at last. But you need to understand that the woman has been in quite a state since you left. She's been inconsolable at best, and at times in the iron grip of something akin to hysteria. We've tried to calm her down, but to no avail. I'm afraid that, with all she's been through, it's all the more daunting for her to have to face the sudden return of her unique kind of visions. It's obviously difficult for her to come to grips with having them again, to say nothing of the nature of this particular one. We finally put her to bed, hoping that if she got some rest she would gain her strength back and be better able to sort out the confusion of her visions. At least she's not in a state like Queen Cirilla. She's fighting not to allow herself to fall into that madness. She is aware that she needs to be able to help us, but at the moment her despair is simply overpowering her common sense. I'm sure, too, that her complete exhaustion is playing a role in her difficulty. We're hoping that after some rest she can add more to what she's already told us. And what has she said? Nicky asked, hoping the answer might provide a clue. Zed steadied her eyes a moment. She said that you would come back without Richard. Nicky stared at the man. And what has become of him? Zed's gaze fell away. That's the part we're trying to get out of her. My Ajeel has gone dead, Rika said. I can't feel the bond. I can't feel Lord Rawl. What if he's dead? Zed turned a little and lifted a hand, as if urging her to calm down. Let's not jump to conclusions. There could be any number of explanations. Kara did not look at all cheered by his suggestion. Such as? She asked. Zed turned his hazel eyes toward her, studying the moored Sith for a moment as he considered his answer. I don't know, Kara. I just don't know. I've been running every possibility through my mind ever since Jebra told me that he wouldn't return with you. There are any number of possibilities, but at this moment scant evidence to go on. We will not leave a single rock unturned, I can promise you that. Nicky swallowed back the lump rising in her throat. Right now, our best chance is to see if we can find out from Jebra where Richard is. If we can get that much out of her, then we can act. If we can act, then we have a chance to help him. If he's still alive, Rika said. Nicky gritted her teeth as she turned to glare on the woman. He's alive. Rika swallowed. I was just saying. Nicky is right, Kara insisted. This is Lord Rawl we're talking about. He's alive. A tear rolled down her cheek. He's alive! Nonetheless, the wizard said in a pained voice, we have to be prepared should the worst turn out to be true. When he saw the look on Kara's face, he offered a small smile. Saying it out loud will not make it so. What is, is. I'm only saying that we must be prepared for any eventuality, that's all. It's the wise thing to do. It's what Richard himself would do if he lost one of us, and what he would want us to do should anything happen to him. Wouldn't you expect him to fight on if something happened to you? We simply cannot ignore the things we are facing. Richard would want us to fight on, to fight for ourselves. Nicky thought, perhaps more than ever before, that she was hearing the first wizard himself speaking. She could see where Richard got some of his remarkable resolve. Kara glared at the man. You're talking like he's dead. He's not. Zed offered her a smile and nodded his agreement. He was not able to make it look convincing. I need to talk to Jebra, Nicky said. Right now, that's the best place to start. What else has she had to say about her vision? Zed sighed. Not much. It's been years since she has had a vision, and this one was not only a complete surprise, but apparently overpoweringly appalling. I have begun to fear that the reason she hasn't had visions is because of what Richard had to say about magic failing. If so, then for this one to break through her failing abilities speaks volumes. While she was conscious and during the periods when she's been coherent, her ability to grasp the entirety of her vision, the events in it, seemed to have been fragmented and incomplete. Maybe we can help her to piece it together, Nicky said as gently as possible. despite how powerfully determined she was to make the woman do what was needed. Zed obviously didn't think it was going to do any good, but he apparently would rather invest his effort in the attempt than surrender to the unimaginable. "This way," he said, as he turned with a flourish and rushed off down the dimly lit hall. At a rather small, round-topped door with intricate vines and overlapping leaves carved into the mahogany panels, Zed, with Nikki and the two moored Sith flanking him, gently knocked. While he waited for an answer, he turned to Rika. "Go and get Nathan. Tell him it's urgent and that he will need to pack. He is going to have to leave at once." Nikki suspected what Zed was going to ask Nathan to do, but she forced the thought from her mind. It would require her to think of the unthinkable. She instead concentrated on the task at hand. She had to get Jebra to tell her where Richard was, tell her what was happening to him. If necessary, Nikki intended to use her gift to accomplish the task. As Rika raced off down the hall, Zed rapped again, a little louder. When there was no response, he looked back over his shoulder at Nikki. He fidgeted with the cuff of his simple robes. "Do you sense anything odd?" Nikki was so filled with frantic thoughts and emotions that she hadn't been paying any attention. They were in the keep, after all. There were alarms everywhere that should protect them from any unwanted visitors. She set aside her thoughts as her senses went into a heightened state of awareness. "Now that you mention it, something does feel odd." "Odd like what?" Kara asked, as she spun her Ajeel back up into her hand. She looked startled for just an instant, before realization cut off the surprise. Nikki gently lifted the wizard's hand from the lever before he could open the door. "There isn't anyone in there with her, is there? Maybe Tom or Friedrich?" Zed frowned at her. "Not that I know of. Those two are out on patrol. I was sitting with Jebra when I sensed you and Kara coming. She was asleep. I had wanted to be near if she awoke and was able to tell me any more about her vision. I left her and came to meet you, hoping to see that she had been wrong about Richard. Anne and Nathan have already gone to bed. I suppose it's possible that it could be one of them." Nikki, her inner senses now fully alert, shook her head. "It's not either of them. Something else." Zed stared off as he puzzled at the question, the way one would listen for any sound. But Nikki knew that he wasn't exactly listening for a telltale sound. He was doing the same thing she was doing, using his gift to probe what they couldn't see or hear, to try to sense the presence of life. As far as Nikki could sense, though, there were only the three of them close by, her and Zed and Kara, and more faintly on the other side of the door, Jebra. But there was something else as well. The feeling, though, made no sense. It was a presence, but not the kind of sensation she would have were there another person lurking beyond the door. It did seem, though, as if she might have had a very similar sensation just recently. She frowned, trying to remember. "I have extra alarms set all over this area," Zed told her. Nikki nodded. "I know, I felt them. There isn't any way someone could have gotten past them. I would know." "Bags, there's no way even a mouse could get by the snares I set." "Could it be because of what Lord Rawl told us?" Kara asked in a low voice. "I mean, about there being something wrong with magic? Could it be that there's something wrong with your gift, and that's why you feel what you feel?" Zed gave the woman a sour look. "You mean you think our gift is what? Scrambled?" Kara shrugged and then added to the idea. "I don't know much about magic, but maybe that's what's wrong with my Ajeel. Maybe that's all it is. Lord Rawl was pretty insistent that he knew that magic was corrupted. Maybe your gifted senses are corrupted in that same way. Maybe the conclusion I was jumping to is all wrong. Maybe that's why. The corruption." Zed huffed, scoffing at the idea. He lifted an arm to the side, and the oil lamps on the tables flanking the door went dark. "Well, that much of my power works, so that means it works," he whispered. He laid a hand back on the lever as he gave Nikki a resolute look. "Be ready for anything." "Wait," Nikki said. Zed looked back over his shoulder. His features were hard to see in the dim light, but his eyes were not. She saw in them some of Richard's eyes. "What is it?" he asked. "I just remembered something I've been trying to figure out." Nikki steepled her fingers as she hurriedly tried to recall the details. She finally shook a finger as she spoke. "When the beast attacked us while we were traveling, I felt an odd sensation. I discounted it because being in the Slith is so strange to begin with that it's hard to tell if anything you're feeling is important, much less really out of the ordinary. Everyday sensations can seem wondrous, even miraculous. You don't know if it's all just the culmination of all the unfamiliar perceptions or something more." "Exactly when did you have this feeling?" Zed asked, suddenly acutely interested in what she had to say. "All the time you were traveling, or at one specific time?" "No, like I said, it was after the beast attacked us." "Be more specific. Think. Was it when the beast attacked? Maybe when it grabbed Richard? Or when it grabbed you?" Nikki pressed her fingertips to her temples as she squeezed her eyes shut, desperately trying to recall it accurately. "No. No, it was after I was pulled away from Richard. Not immediately after, but shortly. What was the sequence in which these events took place? The beast attacked. We were fighting it. I tried to use my gift, but it didn't help. The beast was hurting me. Richard used his knife to cut away some of the tentacles. He saved me from being crushed. Then the beast pulled Kara away from him. Not long after that, it pulled me away from him as well. It was then, after that, not immediately after, but it was only a short time later. I know because it was when I was frantically searching for Richard that I felt the odd sensation." Nikki looked up at the wizard. "The thing is, right after I felt that sensation, I could no longer sense the presence of the beast. I searched, trying to find Richard, but couldn't. As the Slith swept us back to the keep, the feeling swiftly faded and I forgot all about it." "What did it feel like, this sensation?" Nikki gestured. "It felt exactly the same as what is beyond the door." Zed stared at her for a long moment. "What is beyond feels the same? A kind of humming flow of power?" Nikki nodded. "A charge of magic that somehow is baseless." "Magic frequently seems to be free-floating," Kara said. "What's so odd about that?" Zed shook his head. "Magic isn't something that just floats around by itself. Magic has no consciousness. But this feeling in some way mimics that kind of conscious intent."
"Yes," Nikki said. "That's my sense of it. That's why it feels so odd. Because magic with this kind of bearing cannot be baseless. This is domination generating its characteristic controlling fields of presence, but without the life necessary to generate it."
Zed straightened. "That's a very good description of what I feel." He peered suspiciously at the door.
"I think that if we get closer, we might be able to sense it better and find out what it is. If we can get close enough, perhaps we can analyze it." He gave them both a look.
"Let's be careful, shall we?" The three of them huddled close in the dim hallway as the wizard carefully turned the lever and slowly pushed open the door. Nikki sensed no more with the door partly open than she had with it closed. Zed stuck his head inside for a moment, then pushed the door the rest of the way open. The room was dark, with only the dim light from the hall revealing shapes and shadows of what was inside. At the far wall on their left, Nikki could see an empty chair with a comforter folded neatly and draped over the back. Not too far from the doorway on the same side of the room sat a short round table with a lamp that wasn't lit. Beyond the table, the bed lay empty. The rumpled sheets had been pushed off the side of the bed and puddled on the floor. Nikki peered around along with Zed and Kara, but she didn't see Jebra. If she was somewhere else in the room, it was too dark to spot her. With the odd sensation even stronger inside the room, Nikki's inner perception wasn't much help. Zed sent a flicker of his horn into the lamp. The wick was turned low, so the light wasn't strong enough to chase the heavy shadows from the corners, or the far side of the wardrobe on the other side of the room. Still, there was no sign of Jebra. Nikki, detached from her emotions and focused instead on perception governed by her Han, stepped past Zed to stand tense and still in the center of the room, listening. With her gift, she tried to open herself to the sensation of another presence lurking in the darkness, but she felt none. A faint breeze rustled the curtains. The double doors, made of small glass panes, both stood open to a small balcony. Nikki knew from the balcony in her own room nearby that this balcony also overlooked the dark city far below at the base of the mountain. Atop the balcony railing, a dark silhouette blotted out the moonlit countryside beyond. Behind Nikki, Zed turned up the wick on the oil lamp. When the light came up, Nikki saw that it was Jebra out on that balcony. Her back toward them, she was standing barefoot atop the fat stone railing. "Dear spirits," Kara whispered. "She's going to jump." The three of them stood frozen, fearing to do anything that might startle the woman and cause her to jump before they could reach her. She didn't seem to know yet that they were there. "Jebra," Zed said in a soft, cautious voice, "we've come to see you." If Jebra heard him, she didn't show any reaction. Nikki didn't think that Jebra heard anything, though, except the haunting whisper of magic. Nikki could feel the faint waves of that alien power rushing past her, humming toward the seer standing like a stone statue on the railing of the balcony. She stared out over the city of Idendril far below. A gentle breeze ruffled her short hair. The balcony, Nikki knew, while facing the valley below, was not right out over the edge of the keep. Still, Jebra was confronting a drop of hundreds of feet to one of the inner courtyards, walkways, ramparts, or slate roofs of the keep. At this height, it didn't matter that she wouldn't be falling down the mountain were she to fall or jump. She would just as surely be killed against the stone of the keep far below. "Stars," Jebra said in a low, thin voice to the empty space before her. Zed seized Nikki's arm and pulled her close. He put his mouth by her ear. "I think someone is seeking the same answers we are. I think someone is probing her mind. That's what we feel. It's a thief of thoughts." "Jagang," Kara breathed. Nikki knew that that would be the logical assumption. With the bond to Richard somehow broken, Jagang could, in theory, do such a thing. Without Richard filling the role of the Lord Rawl, all of them were suddenly vulnerable to the Dreamwalker. A sickening ripple of icy dread coursed through Nikki at the memory of Jagang possessing her mind, her will. Without the Lord Rawl, the bond protecting them all was broken. If the Emperor was riding the night, he very well might discover them unprotected. The Dreamwalker could, at any moment, without warning, drift unseen, unfelt, right into their minds and invest himself in their thoughts. But Nikki knew Jagang. She knew what it was like when he possessed a person's mind. He had at one time, after all, possessed her mind, controlled her, ruled her through that terrible presence. This was different. "No," she said. "It's not Jagang. What I sense is something else."
"How do you know for sure?" Zed whispered.
Nikki finally took her gaze off Jebra and looked at the frowning wizard.
"Well, for one thing," she whispered back, "if it was Jagang, you would sense nothing. The Dreamwalker leaves no trace. There is no way to tell he is there. This is entirely different."
Zed rubbed his clean-shaven chin.
"It still seems somehow familiar," he murmured to himself.
"Stars," Jebra said again to the night beyond the balcony. Zed started for the open doorway through the double doors, but Nikki seized his arm and held him back.
"Wait,"
she whispered. "Stars fallen to ground," Jebra said in a haunting voice. Zed and Nikki shared a look. "Stars among the grass," Jebra said in that same dead voice. Zed stiffened.
Dear spirits, I recognize it now. Nikki leaned closer.
The presence?
The wizard nodded slowly. That's the feeling of a witch woman plying her power.
Jebra lifted her arms to the side. She's going to jump! Nikki shouted as Jebra began to topple forward out into the night.
Chapter 33. Richard coughed violently. The pain of the involuntary upheaval jolted him to consciousness. He heard himself trying unsuccessfully to groan. He had no breath with which to make a groan. With consciousness came a growing, confused panic of suffocation, as if he were somehow drowning. He coughed again, wincing in pain as he did so. He tried to cry out in agony as he curled up into a ball on the ground, arms pressed tight across his middle, trying to prevent another fit of convulsive coughing.
Breathe.
Richard regarded the haunting voice that seemingly came from some netherworld place as the voice of insanity. He was doing everything he could not to breathe. He took careful, shallow, thimbleful breaths, trying to prevent another racking bout of coughing.
Breathe.
He didn't know where he was, and at the moment he didn't really care. All that mattered was the feeling of suffocating. He didn't want to breathe, despite how desperately he needed a breath. The sensation was so oppressive, so sickening, that in his mind it was not only completely debilitating, but all-powerful. Dying seemed preferable to the feeling continuing. He couldn't endure it continuing. Richard didn't want to move because, with each passing moment, it was becoming easier not to breathe. It seemed that if he could just manage to keep from breathing a little longer, then over the crest of that dark hill out there, somewhere ahead of him, the pain and suffering would lift. He fought to lie perfectly still, hoping the spinning world would stop before he vomited. He could not imagine how much that would hurt. If he could just lie still a little longer, then it would all become easier. If he could just lie still a little longer, then it would all go away.
Breathe.
He ignored the distant, silken voice. His mind drifted to a time in the past when he had hurt this much. It had been when Denna had him chained and helpless, when she had him at her mercy, when she hurt him until he was delirious from being tortured. Denna had taught him to endure pain, though. He envisioned her standing there, watching him, waiting to see if he would tip over the edge into death. There had been times with her when he had reached the crest of that distant dark hill and started down the other side. When that happened, Denna would be right there to put her mouth over his, forcefully breathing her life into him. She had not only controlled his life, she had controlled his death. She had taken everything. Not even his own death belonged to him. It belonged to her. She watched him now. Her silver face came close, waiting to see what he would do. He wondered if he would be granted death, or if she would again put her mouth over his and
breathe.
Richard puzzled at her. Denna didn't look at all like a silver statue.
You must breathe, the silken voice told him. If you do not, you will die.
Richard blinked at the beautiful face softly lit by the cold moonlight. He tried to pull a little more air into his lungs. He squeezed his eyes shut.
Hurts,
he whispered with the entirety of that shallow breath.
You must. It is life.
Life. Richard didn't know if he wanted life. He was so tired, so exhausted. Death seemed so inviting. No more struggle. No more pain. No more despair. No more loneliness. No more tears. No more agony of missing Kaelin.
Kaelin!
Breathe.
If he died, who would help her? He drew a deeper breath,
forcing it past the scalding agony it pulled down into his lungs. He thought of Kalin's smile instead of the pain. He drew another breath, deeper yet. A silver hand gently glided over the back of his shoulder, as if to comfort him in his agony of struggling to hold on to life. The face looked sadly sympathetic as it watched his struggle.
"Breathe."
Richard nodded, as he tightened his fists and gasped in the cold fire of the night air. He coughed up thin red fluid and clots of blood that tasted metallic. He pulled in another breath, giving him the power to cough out more of the liquid burning his lungs. For a time he lay on his side, alternating between gasping in air and coughing out fluid. When he was breathing again, if raggedly, he flopped onto his back, hoping to make the spinning stop. He closed his eyes, but that only made it worse, adding a kind of tilting, rolling movement to the spinning. His stomach roiled on the brink of upheaval. He opened his eyes, and in the darkness stared up at the leaves above him. He saw mostly maple leaves in the canopy of tree limbs above him. Looking at leaves, talismans of the familiar, felt good. In the moonlight, he saw other kinds of trees as well. To take his mind off the pain and nausea, he made himself identify all the trees that he could make out. There were a smattering of heart-shaped linden leaves, and, towering farther above, a bough or two of what looked to be white pine. There were some clusters of oak in the distance to the sides, along with spruce and balsam. Close by, though, there were mostly maples. With every breath of breeze he could hear the distinctive soft rattle of cottonwood leaves. Beside the pain associated with the difficulty of breathing, Richard clearly recognized that there was something wrong within himself. Something far more basic, more elemental. It wasn't an injury in the conventional sense, but he knew that there was something dreadfully wrong. He tried to identify the perception, but he couldn't pinpoint it. It was a hollow, empty, desolate feeling, unrelated to the familiar emotions of his life. Things like his need to find Kalin, or what he had done with setting the Daharan army loose on the old world. He considered the troubling things Shota had told him, but that wasn't it either. It was more a sense of a disturbing void within himself that he knew he had never felt before. That's why he had so much trouble identifying it. It was a completely unfamiliar condition. There had been something there, some sense of himself, that he realized he had never thought about, never identified as a distinct element, a discrete part of his makeup, that was now missing. Richard felt as if he was no longer himself. The story Shota had told him of Barakas and the book he had written, Secrets of a War Wizard's Power, came to mind. Richard wondered if his inner voice was trying to suggest that such a book might help him in just such a situation. He had to admit that the problem did feel connected in some way to his gift. Thinking about that book caused his mind to wander to what Shota had told him about his mother, that she had not died alone in that fire. Zed was insistent that he'd looked through the charred remains of the house and he had found no other bones. How could that be? Either Zed or Shota had to be wrong. For some reason, he could not believe that either of them were. Somewhere deep in the back of his mind, the answer ticked at him. Try as he might, though, he could not coax it out. Richard felt a pang of loneliness for his mother, a feeling that had visited him from time to time throughout his life. He wondered what she would have to say about all that had happened to him. She'd never had a chance to see him grow up, to see him as a man. She'd only known him as a boy. He knew his mother would love Kalin. She would be so happy for him, so proud to have a daughter-in-law like Kalin. She always wanted him to have a good life. There could be no better life than a life with Kalin. But he no longer had a life with Kalin. He guessed that he had life, and, all things considered, that was about as much as could be expected at the moment.
At least he could work toward his dreams. Dead men had no dreams. Richard lay on his back, letting the air saturate his burning muscles, letting himself regain his senses, his composure. He was so weak he could hardly move, so he didn't try to. Instead, as long as he was lying there recovering, he focused on everything that had happened, trying to put it all back together in his mind. He had been traveling back to the keep with Nicky and Kara when they had been attacked. It had been the beast. He had sensed its aura of evil. It appeared in a different form than he had ever seen before, but it was the beast's nature to assume different forms. The only thing he could count on to be consistent was that the beast would continue to come after him until it killed him. He remembered fighting it. His hand went to a place on his leg where one of the tentacles had squeezed until he thought his leg would be stripped of flesh. His thigh was swollen and painful to the touch, but fortunately not torn open. He remembered slicing through some of the creature's arms. He remembered Nicky trying to use her power and wishing that she would stop because it was somehow conducting right through the slith, so that some of the power she had unleashed against the beast had ripped through him. He suspected that were it not for the substance of the slith, Nicky's magic could have killed him. It certainly didn't harm the beast, at least not enough to slow it down. It, too, must have been insulated, at least to some extent, by the slith. He remembered Kara being pulled away from him. He remembered Nicky likewise being violently separated from him. He remembered the beast trying to rip him apart, and he remembered managing to abruptly break free. But then something happened that he did not understand. While he was separated from the beast, he had been jolted by an unfamiliar, painful sensation that ripped right down into the core of his being. It had been distinctly different from the pain caused by Nicky's power, or that of any magic he had ever felt. Magic. Once he formed the thought, he realized that he was right. It had been magic of some sort. Even if it was the touch of a kind of conjuring completely unlike anything he had ever felt, he recognized that it had been the touch of magic. Even though he'd been free of the beast, he hadn't even known where the beast was at that particular moment. That was when everything had suddenly changed. As he'd gasped in pain from the abrupt assault of the strange charge of power, the slith's essence again filled his lungs. That breath had brought a shock of panic. Richard remembered a similar feeling when he had been young. He'd been with several other boys, diving down to the bottom of a pond in a contest to retrieve pebbles. Their afternoon of swimming and diving from branches overhanging the small but deep pond had churned up the muddy bottom. Under the murky water, while diving for pebbles, Richard lost his sense of direction. He was out of air when he bumped his head on a thick branch. Being disoriented, he thought that bumping into the low branch meant that he'd broken the surface and run into one of the low-lying limbs hanging out over the edge of the pond. He hadn't. It had been a submerged branch. Before realizing what he had really done, he breathed in some of the muddy water. He'd been close to the surface, to the shore, and to his friends. It had been a terrifying experience, but it had ended quickly and he'd recovered soon enough, learning a lesson to have more respect for water. That memory of breathing in water as a boy, in addition to the natural unwillingness to inhale water, had made it all the more difficult to breathe in the slith the first time. He overcame that fear, though, and it turned out to be a rapturous experience. But in the slith, when he suddenly found himself drowning, there was no surface, no shore, no help at hand. Such a thing had never happened in the slith before. There had been no way for him to escape, no way to get to the surface, and no one to help him. Richard looked over in the moonlight. The slith was close by, watching him. He realized that she was not in a well, the way he had always seen her before. They were on the ground in a sparsely wooded place. He could hear no sounds but the sounds of nature. He could detect nothing but forest smells. Beneath leaves, pine needles, forest debris, and roots, Richard felt a rough stone floor.
The grout joints were fat, more than a finger wide. These were not tight joints like those in finely crafted palaces, but they were without a doubt man-made. And the silver face of the Slith, rather than looking out from within her well, had risen slightly from a rather small and irregular opening in the ancient stone floor. Ragged pieces from that stone floor now lay about on top of the dried leaves and rubble of branches, as if they had just been broken open from underneath, as if the Slith had broken up through them. Richard sat up. "Slith, are you all right?"
"Yes, Master."
"Do you know what happened? It felt like I was drowning."
"You were."
Richard stared at the face in the moonlight. "But how can that be? What went wrong?" A silver hand reached up from the ground to trail quicksilver fingers across his brow, testing him.
"You do not have the required magic to travel."
Richard blinked in confusion. "I don't understand. I've traveled many times before."
"Before you had what was required."
"And now I don't?"
The Slith watched him a moment.
"Now you do not," she confirmed.
Richard felt like he must be hallucinating. "But I have both sides of the gift. I can travel."
The Slith cautiously reached out and again felt his face. The hand slipped down to his chest, pausing for a moment to put light pressure against him. Her arm drew back into the dark hole in the broken stone.
"You do not have the required magic."
"You already said that. It makes no sense. I was already traveling."
"While you were traveling, you lost what is required."
Richard's eyes widened.
"You mean to say that I lost one side of the gift?"
"No. I mean to say that you do not have the gift. You have no magic at all. You may not travel."
Richard had to run the words through his head again to be sure he'd heard correctly. He didn't see how he could have mistaken what the Slith had said. His mind raced through fragments of jumbled thoughts as he tried to grasp how such a thing was possible. A terrible realization came to him. Could it be that the corruption caused by the chimes might be responsible? Had that corruption finally caught up with him and undone his gift? Rotted it away without his knowing it until it had finally failed? But that would not explain the sensation he'd felt back in the Slith, just after he'd escaped the grip of the beast and just before he'd started drowning. The sudden sensation of some dark and furtive magic reaching out when he was most vulnerable and touching him. Richard looked around but saw nothing other than the trees. They were dense enough that he couldn't see beyond them in the moonlight. As a guide, he hated the feeling of not knowing where he was.
"Where are we, anyway? How did we get here?"
"When it happened, when you lost what is needed to travel, I had to bring you here."
"And where is here?"
"I am sorry, but I don't know exactly."
"How can you bring me here and not know where you are? You always know where you are and the places to which you can travel."
"I already told you. I have never been to this place before. This place is an emergency passage. I knew of it, of course, but I have never been here before. There has never been an emergency within me before. That terrible beast hurt me. I was struggling to keep all of you alive. And then there was something else that came within me. I could not stop it. Like the beast, it entered me without my permission. It violated me."
That confirmed Richard's sense of events. That just after the beast lost its grip on him, something else, some kind of power, had reached out and touched him with its dominion.
"I'm sorry that you were hurt, Slith. What happened to the beast?"
"After this other power came into me, the beast became no more."
"You mean that this other power destroyed it?"
"No, the power did not touch the beast. It touched only you with its full force. After it did, then you no longer had what is required to travel. After that, the beast cast around in me for a brief time and then vanished. I could no longer sustain you within me,
so I had to find the nearest emergency portal.
What about Nikki and Kara? Were they hurt? Are they safe?
They too felt the pain of what happened to me, and one of them tried to use her power in me, something that is wrong to do. After I brought you here, I took them to the keep where they had wished to travel. I told the one that used her power that it was dangerous to do so, and she must not do such a thing.
I think I understand, Richard said. It hurt me too. Were they hurt badly?
They are safe at the keep.
Then we must be somewhere between the people's palace and the keep, Richard said, half to himself.
No.
He looked over at the liquid silver face. I don't understand. We were going from the palace to the keep. If you let me out, then this place here, this emergency passage out, would have to be between the palace and the keep.
While I don't know this place, I do know its general area. We are at a place a little more than halfway across the Midlands from the keep, past Agadon Reach, almost to the wilds.
Richard felt as if the world had just lurched and slid him far from where he had been. But that's much, much farther from the people's palace than the keep is. Why didn't you take me to the closest place, to the keep?
I do not function in that way. What to you may seem like the shortest distance between two places is not the shortest way for me. I am in many places at once.
Richard leaned toward the sliff. How can you be in many places at once?
You have one foot on that dark stone, and one on a stone that is lighter. You are in two places at once.
Richard sighed. I guess I get your point.
I travel in a way that is different from your way of traveling. This place, here, even though it is halfway across the Midlands for you, was the closest place for me. I had to get you out into your world again so that you could breathe. You no longer had what was needed to travel. Your lungs were filled with me. For those without the gift, breathing me is poison. It will kill them. But for you, since you were in me, and breathing me already, there was a brief period when you were going through a transition, so having me in you was not instantly fatal. You would have died soon, but there was a brief time before that would happen. I knew that the time you had before you would die was not very long at all. I thought to do my best to save you, to get you to a place where you could be back in your world and hopefully recover. I brought you here, broke the seal, and placed you out in your world again. You were hurt, but I knew that the essence of me still within you would help sustain your life for a short time.
If I could no longer travel because I don't have the required gift, then what made you think that?
I was made to have properties to assist in emergencies. Those properties are within me, and thereby they were within you. They helped to start the process of recovering. It is only intended for a crisis, and even then I was warned that it could not be certain that it would work because there are variables that cannot be controlled. While you slept between worlds, and my magic that you still had within you was working to extract what had now become poison to you, I finished taking the others to the keep. When I returned, I waited with you until you were recovered enough to be ready to breathe again. Then I helped to remind you what you must do to live. For a time I did not know if it would work. I have never had to do such a thing before. It was terrible to have to wait while I watched you lying there, not knowing if you would ever again breathe. I feared that I had failed you, and that I would be the cause of your death.
Richard stared at the silver face for a long moment. Finally he offered her a smile. Thank you, Sliff. You saved my life. You did the right things. You did good.
You are my master. I would do anything for you.
Your master. A master who can't travel.
It is as puzzling.
Richard tried to think it through, tried to make sense of it. But with the pain of breathing after nearly drowning in the sliff, still feeling like it was pressing heavily on his chest, he was having trouble making his mind focus on thinking. Richard rested his forearms across his knees. I don't suppose there is any way for you to take me back to the keep.
Yes, Master. If you wish to travel, I can take you.
Richard sat up straighter. You can? How?
You must simply acquire the required magic, and then I can take you again. Then we will travel. You will be pleased.
Acquire the required magic. He didn't even know how to use the magic he had, or used to have. He couldn't imagine what had happened to his gift, and he had absolutely no idea how to get it back. There had been any number of times he'd wanted to be rid of it, but now that it had actually happened, all he could think about was getting it back. When his gift had failed, the beast had apparently lost him in the Slough. As consolation to losing his gift, it seemed the beast would be one less problem he had to face at the moment. His gift, after all, had been the mechanism by which the beast was keyed to him, the way in which it hunted him. There was supposed to be balance in magic. Perhaps that was the balance to losing it. Richard raked his fingers back through his hair. At least Nicky and Kara made it through and are safe. He looked up at the Slough. You're sure that they're all right?
Yes, Master. They are safe. I took them to the keep, where they had wished to travel. They had what was required to travel.
And you told them where I was? You told them what had happened?
She looked surprised by what had sounded more like a mandate than a question. No, Master. I would never reveal what I do with another.
Oh, great, he muttered. He worked to keep his exasperation in check. But you've told me about others.
You are my master. I do things with you that I would not do with anyone else.
Slough, they are my friends. They're probably frantic with worry for me. You must tell them what they need to know.
The silver head tilted toward him. Master, I cannot betray you. I would not.
It's not a betrayal. I'm telling you that it's all right to tell them what happened.
The Slough looked like she thought this was just about the strangest request she had ever had. Master, you wish me to tell others about us, about what we do when we are together?
Slough, try to understand.
You are no longer a whore. But people use me for their pleasure.
It's not the same thing.
Richard raked his fingers back through his hair, trying not to sound angry.
Listen, wizards in ancient times changed you from who you were, from what you were.
The Slough nodded solemnly. I know, Master. I remember. I was the one it happened to, after all.
You're different now. It's not the same. You can't equate the two things. They're different.
I have been given a duty to serve others in this capacity. My nature is still within me.
But there are some of us who use you who greatly value your help.
I have always been valued for what I do.
This is different from what you did before.
Richard didn't want to be having this argument. He had more important matters to worry about.
Slough, when you travel with us, you are often helping to save lives. When you traveled with us to the People's Palace, you were helping me to end the war. You were doing a good thing.
If you say so, Master. But you must understand that those who created me made me the way I am. They used what I once was to create me as I am now. I can be no way other than the way I am. I cannot wish myself to be different, any more than you can travel now simply by wishing it. Richard sighed. I suppose not. With one hand, he snapped dry twigs in half as he thought it over. He shared a long look with the beautiful face watching him, hanging on his every word. Finally, he spoke softly. There are times when there is no other way, and you must trust others. This is one of those times. Something about his words clearly struck home. The beautiful, liquid face came a little closer. You are the one, the Slough whispered.
The one? Which one?
The one Barakas told me would come. The hair on the back of Richard's neck stood on end.
You knew Barakas?
He was once my master, like you are now.
Of course,
Richard whispered to himself.
He was first wizard.
He is the one who insisted that I possess the emergency elements I told you about. He also directed that there be this emergency portal. Had he not done those things, you would have died. He was very wise. Very wise, Richard agreed as he stared wide-eyed at the sliff. You said that Barakas told you something about one who would come? The sliff nodded. He was kind to me. His wife hated me, but Barakas was kind to me.
You knew his wife, too?
Magda.
Why would she hate you?
Because Barakas was kind to me, and because I took him away from her.
You mean you took him away when he wished to travel?
Of course. When I would tell him that he would be pleased, she would fold her arms and glare at me.
Richard smiled a little. She was jealous.
She loved him and did not want him to leave her. When I would return with him after we traveled, she would often be there waiting for him. He would always smile when he saw her, and she would smile in turn.
And what was it that Barakas said about me?
He told me the same thing that you just did. That there are times when there is no other way, and you must trust others. Those were his words, just as they were yours. He said that one day another master would say those exact same words, and then add exactly the same words you did. This is one of those times. He told me that if a master ever said these words, that meant that he was the right one, and I was to tell him some things. Richard could feel every hair on his arms stand on end.
You took Magda Sira somewhere, didn't you?
Yes, master. After that, I never saw Barakas again. But before, when he told me that someday someone would say those words, he told me to tell them his message.
He left a message?
When she nodded, he rolled his hand.
So what is it?
I am sorry. I don't know the answers that would save you. If I did, please believe that I would give them eagerly. But I know the good in you. I believe in you. I do know that you have within you what you must to succeed. There will be times when you doubt yourself. Do not give up. Remember then that I believe in you, that I know you can accomplish what you must. You are a rare person. Believe in yourself. Know that I believe you are the one who can do it. Richard sat frozen. The words echoed around in his head. They were oddly familiar.
I've heard almost those exact words before.
The sliff glided a little closer, her features tightening. You have? Richard concentrated as he ran the words through his mind again, trying to recall. And then he did.
It was right after Shota had told him about Barakas. Just before she left, she'd said those very words to him.
There was something about those words, spoken by Shota, that had aroused an indistinct memory. It was Shota, the witch woman, Richard said as he frowned in recollection. She told me those words. The sliff retreated. I am sorry, master. You have failed the test.
Richard looked up at her. What test?
The test Barakas just gave you. I am sorry, but you have failed his test. I can tell you nothing more.
Without further word, the sliff abruptly vanished into the black hole in the stone. Richard threw himself down on his stomach, leaning down into the hole. No, wait! Don't leave!
His own voice echoed up out of the empty black shaft. The sliff was gone. Without his gift, he had no way to call her back.
Chapter 34. Nikki heard a soft knock at the door. Zed looked up, but he didn't stand. Kara, hands clasped behind her back, gazing out the window, looked back over her shoulder. Nikki, standing closest to the door, pulled it open. The small flame in the lamp on the table was not up to the task of chasing the gloom from the room, but it cast what warm light it could across the face of the tall prophet. "What's going on?" Nathan asked in his deep voice.
He cast a suspicious look around at those in the room. Rika wouldn't say much other than that you and Kara were back and Zed wanted to see me immediately. That's right, Zed said. Come in, please. Nathan glanced around the somber room as he strode in. Where's Richard?
Nicky swallowed. He didn't make it back with us.
Didn't make it back? He paused to take in the bleak look on Nicky's face.
Dear spirits.
Zed, sitting at Jebra's side at the bed, didn't look up. Jebra was unconscious. When they tried to close her eyes, her lids would pop open again. They finally quit trying and let her stare up at the ceiling. Zed had already tended to her broken leg as best he could. She was very fortunate that Kara was not only quick but strong, and that she had been able to catch Jebra's ankle just in time as her dead weight had toppled outward from the balcony. Still, her momentum had whipped the seer down around and under the balcony, where her leg smacked a support strut that broke her leg. Nicky suspected that the woman had been unconscious the moment she started falling. It had been a bad break. Zed had set to work immediately on her injury, but because of the unusual state Jebra was in, he had not been able to heal the break. All he had been able to do was set it, splint it, and add enough of his gift to help it begin to mend. When she finally awoke, he would be able to finish the healing. If she awoke, Nicky had her doubts. Nicky knew that Jebra's broken leg was the least of the woman's problems. Despite everything they had tried, they had been unable to arouse her from her catatonic state. Zed had tried, Nicky had tried. She had even tried dangerous conjuring involving subtractive magic. Zed had been against it at first, but when Nicky confronted him with the stark nature of their choices, he grudgingly agreed. Unfortunately, even that hadn't helped. Jebra's mind was locked away from them. Whatever magic the witch woman had used on her was something they were unable to break. Whatever had been done didn't appear to Nicky to be intended to be reversible. If they knew its nature, perhaps they might stand a chance of breaking the spell. But they didn't know its makeup. Nathan bent and touched two fingers to the unconscious woman's temple. He straightened and helplessly shook his head at Zed's questioning expression. Nicky had never seen anything like it. Zed, on the other hand, had in the beginning rubbed his chin as he brooded. It muttered that there was something oddly familiar about its nature. What, he couldn't say. Despite how insistent Nicky had been, and despite his own desperate desire to do something, Zed was at his wit's end that he could not pinpoint why he felt that he had seen some aspect of such conjuring before. He was, after all, he had reminded them, the first wizard, and he had spent a good portion of his life studying such things. He believed that he should be able to identify what kind of web had been spun around the woman. Nicky knew that if Jebra had been conscious, it would have made the job a great deal easier. But Zed wasn't willing to use an excuse for his own failure to identify what the conjuring involved. Nicky heard a commotion out in the hallway. Nathan stuck his head out the doorway for a look. What is it? A voice in the distance called out. It was Anne, rushing up the hall, escorted by Rika. She finally reached the door. What's going on? As she came into the room, laboring to catch her breath, Nathan laid a big hand on her shoulder. Something has happened to Richard. Strands of gray hair stuck out from the loose bun at the back of her head like a plume of ruffled feathers. A calculating gaze swept over those in the room, assessing the degree of seriousness she saw in each of them. It was the kind of swift, lean evaluation Nicky associated with Anne. As the prelate of the Sisters of the Light, she had always had a commanding presence that could strike fear into just about anyone from high-ranking sister to stable boys. Even though Nicky was no longer a Sister of the Light, her guard always went up whenever the former prelate came into the room. The woman's short stature in no way diminished the air of looming menace that seemed to surround her. Anne turned an intent look up at Nathan. What happened? Is the boy hurt? I don't know yet, Nathan said, holding up a hand to forestall a flood of questions before they could landslide in on him. Let the woman explain. All we know for sure, Nicky said when Anne turned a hot glare on her, is that while we were traveling in the Slif back here from the People's Palace, the beast attacked us. Kara and I tried to help Richard fight it off,
Then we were separated from him. As soon as that happened, I felt some kind of extrinsic magic. Next thing we knew, Kara and I were back at the keep. Richard wasn't with us. We have no idea what happened to him after he was touched by the strange power I sensed. We never saw the beast again, either. After we got back here, Jebra was attacked by a web that I could discern had been cast by the same person who cast the power that touched Richard in the slith. Because Zed recognized its unique composition, we know now that it was power conjured by a witch woman. "And my Aegil doesn't work," Kara said, holding the weapon up. "Our bond to Lord Rahl is broken. We can no longer sense him."
"Dear Creator," Anne whispered as her gaze dropped away.
Zed gestured to the woman lying in the bed before him. "Whatever power it is that this witch woman cast, it left Jebra unconscious. We can't rouse her. Although I know that it was a witch woman's spell that somehow took her, I can't figure out how a witch woman could do such a thing, cast such webs from afar. From my experience, they not only keep to themselves, but they can't accomplish things of this nature. It's beyond their ability."
"Are you certain that it was a witch woman?" Anne asked.
Zed took a deep breath as he considered the question seriously. "I've had dealings with a witch woman before. Once a cat has had its claws in you, you don't soon forget what it feels like. I don't know the specific person who did this, but I know the feel of this. It was a witch woman."
Nikki folded her arms. "I think we have a pretty good idea who the witch woman was.
Six. And don't forget, just because you recognize the signature of a witch woman's power, that doesn't mean that the same limits necessarily apply to the individual who did this. After all, for someone to recognize your power as that of a wizard doesn't mean that they know your limits, or would know your real potential."
"True enough," Zed admitted with a sigh.
Nathan waved off the topic of witch women. "Did Jebra say anything else about the vision she had? Anything at all?"
Zed shared a look with Nikki. "Well, not until the spell took her. Just before she went into this state, we heard her say, 'Stars, stars fallen to ground, stars among the grass.'"
"Stars," Nathan repeated as he paced in the small room, holding an elbow with one hand and tapping the tips of the fingers of the other to his chin. He finally turned toward Zed.
"I'm afraid that such a prophecy means nothing to me. It's probable that she only spoke a fragment aloud. In that case, it could easily be that there isn't enough for me to go on."
Nikki's heart sank. She had been hoping that the prophet would be able to decipher the seer's prophecy. Anne scratched the side of her nose, searching for words.
"So it is possible, then, that we..." She cleared her throat. "That we have lost Richard. That this witch woman killed him."
Kara took an aggressive step forward. "Lord Rahl is not dead." In the echoing silence, Zed rose from the chair. He cast Kara a cautionary glance before addressing Anne.
"I don't think so either."
Anne looked from Kara's heated expression to Zed. "I know why she doesn't believe it is so.
Why don't you?"
He gestured down at Jebra.
"Because of this woman lying here in this bed."
Anne frowned.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, the first vision Jebra has had in several years is about Richard."
"That's right," Nikki put in.
"Her vision was about what was going to happen to him. She told me, specifically, not to let him be alone, not for an instant."
Anne arched an eyebrow.
"And yet you did."
Nikki ignored the affront.
"Yes, not deliberately, but because of the beast. The beast was an unforeseeable factor, a random event."
When Anne only looked more perplexed, Zed explained,
"We believe that it was this witch woman's plan to touch Richard with her power, but the beast dropped in at just the wrong moment, spoiling her carefully constructed plan."
Anne's frown deepened. "In what way?"
"The beast caused her to miss getting Richard, as she had planned," Nikki said. "Because of the beast, she lost Richard in the slith, just as we did. Now she has a problem. She has to find him."
"So she did the same thing we did," Zed said. "She came here, or at least she sent her power here, to find out from the seer where he will be."
"She was seeking prophecy?" Anne asked.
"Witch women see things in the flow of time. Why would she need the seer?"
Zed spread his hands.
Yes, they see things, but as I'm sure Nathan can explain better than I could, they can't see exactly what they want to see, when they want to see it.
Nathan was nodding his agreement.
There is a random element to prophecy. It comes when it comes, not when you wish it to come. Perhaps the wizards of ancient times knew the keys to using prophecy at will, but if they did, they did not pass such knowledge on. It is seldom that you can pick and choose with prophecy what events you want to see.
Zed lifted a finger, stressing his point.
Six probably saw, either through her ability or her conjuring having to do with the events, that Jebra had already had a vision revealing what would happen to Richard and where he would be next, so she simply stole into Jebra's mind to steal the answer.
I think that's why we can't wake Jebra, Nikki said. I don't think that Six wants anyone else to be able to get the information that she already got. While Jebra spoke only a few words aloud, I would bet that Six extracted all of it, the entire vision, from Jebra's mind. I believe that Six then compelled Jebra to jump from that balcony to kill herself, so that she couldn't reveal her vision to anyone else. Failing that, the spell rendered Jebra unconscious. Like suicide, it's a whole lot easier than killing from afar, and just as good for her purpose. Nathan's brow had drawn down as he listened. He rolled a hand as if turning over the event in his mind.
So you think that in her prophecy, Jebra was revealing that Richard is going to find stars that have fallen to ground? That he will be at a place with stars among the grass? Like a place where meteorites are found?
Zed clasped his hands behind his back and nodded.
It rather seems that way.
Nathan stared off as he considered, nodding to himself from time to time. Anne didn't look so convinced.
So you think that Richard is alive? She asked, and that this witch-woman, Six, somehow spelled him?
Nikki gave the former prelate a single firm nod. That's the conclusion Zed and I have reached. Anne leaned closer to her former charge.
For what purpose? I can fathom reasons for Six murdering Richard, but why would she want to get her hands on him?
Nikki didn't shy from the woman's steady gaze. Six usurped the witch-woman who lived up here, Shota.
Why? Well, what did Six take?
Shota's companion, Samuel, she said in answer to her own question. And Samuel has the Sword of Truth, the sword he once carried.
Anne looked like she had just lost the thread of the story.
What does that have to do with anything? What did Samuel use the sword for? What did he steal? Nikki asked.
Anne's eyes went wide.
One of the boxes of Ordon. From a sister of the dark, Nikki said, with the help of the Sword of Truth.
Anne turned a flustered look on Zed.
But why would this woman, Six, want Richard?
Zed's gaze sank to the floor as he rubbed the tips of his fingers across the furrows of his brow.
To open the correct box of Ordon, one has to have a very important book. I think you two, of all people, should be quite familiar with that particular volume.
Nathan's jaw fell open with realization.
The Book of Counted Shadows, Anne breathed. Zed nodded.
The only copy of that book now resides in Richard's head. He burned the original after he had memorized it.
We have to find him first, Anne said.
Zed grunted derisively at the very suggestion, lifting his eyebrows in mock wonder, as if he could never have divined such an idea without her help.
"We have a more immediate problem," Nikki said. Kara, across the small room, waggled her agile.
"Until we find Lord Rawl, there is no bond."
"Without the bond," Nikki said, "we are all at the mercy of the Dreamwalker." The realization seemed to hit Anne like a clap of thunder.
"Something must be done immediately," Zed added. "The threat is dire, and there is little time. If we don't act, we could lose this war at any moment."
"What are you getting at?" Nathan asked suspiciously. Zed looked up at the scowling prophet.
"We need you to become the Lord Rawl. We dare not risk our people being without the bond for another moment. You must then leave at once for the people's palace."
Nathan stood silently, looking grim. He was a tall man with broad shoulders.
With his white hair brushing those shoulders, he cut an imposing figure. It made Nicky sick at heart to think of anyone else taking Richard's place as Lord Rawl. The alternative, though, was to allow the Dreamwalker to ravage their minds. She knew all too well what that was like. She knew how her bond to Richard had not merely saved her life, but shown her the joy of living. Her bond to Richard hadn't been the formal acquiescence to the rule of the Lord Rawl as it was with the people of Dahara. Rather, it had been a deeper commitment to Richard, the man. The man she had loved from almost the first moment she had seen the spark of life in his gray eyes. Richard had shown her not just how to live again, but how to love. She swallowed back the pain of it, of knowing that she could never have him. Worse, of knowing that his heart belonged to another, belonged to someone she didn't even remember. It would be better if Nicky could remember this Kaelin, know that she was smart, loving, beautiful, because then she could be happy for Richard. It was hard to be happy for him when he loved a phantom.
"I understand," Nathan said at last in a deep voice. Anne looked like she had close to 1,000 objections, one to match each year of the prophet's age, but she managed to bottle them up under the cork of her realization of the consequences of not having a Lord Rawl.
"The Dahoran army is not far from the palace," Nathan said. "They will soon have to face Jagang's horde. I think you're right that I would best help our cause if I were there."
This is the end of disc number 12. Please continue listening on disc number 13.